Well, good morning. Thanks for joining us. As Christy said, you know, sometimes it's hard to walk into a new place, and if this is your first time or one of your first times coming, we appreciate that. Thanks for taking that step. And also, if you're joining us online, we appreciate you being with us also. So after my freshman year in college, kind of as a side job, I was a swim coach for a little club, neighborhood club swim team, and on Fridays, because our meets were often on Saturdays, I would just for fun, the last 15 minutes of the practice, I do realize, and I'd break them up into teams, and we're going to do this. But what I quickly found out is, kids are brutal. And if somebody was a slow swimmer, and I'm going to put him here, it's kind of like, we don't want him. He's awful. Put her on another team. And pretty quickly, I said, guys, if I get complaints, we're not going to do relays. I'm going to set the teams. But, you know, that little lesson there kind of drove home the point. We don't want undesirable people, people that are going to slow us down or not make us look as good or bother us. It's like, get them away. That's what we do with undesirable people. Let's keep them at a distance. How did Jesus respond to undesirable people? Was his get away, get your act together, get it right? We're going to think about that today. So if you got a Bible, if you'd open it to Luke chapter 15, we're going to start in verse 1, and we're going to go through verse 32, wrestling with this question, how does Jesus respond to undesirable people? How does Jesus respond to undesirable people? If you haven't been with us, we've been in the Gospel of Luke a while. Luke took it upon himself to do an in-depth study of the life of Jesus for a guy named Theophilus, probably a Gentile convert, who was wondering, what is going on? What is this all about? And so Luke, he's got more content than any of the gospel writers, did an extensive research on Jesus' life, and we believe the Spirit of God saved that for us so we could know about Jesus too. And in fact, he has been using it for the last 2,000 years to reveal Christ to people. What we found out is Jesus was born like no other person. Union of God and a woman to produce the Son of God, fully God, fully human, lived in obscurity for basically his first 30 years as a carpenter, then stepped out into public ministry. When he stepped out, friends, he stepped out doing all kinds of stuff to show that he was Son of God, healing the sick and raising the dead and stilling the storm. And man, he had followers, but he also threatened power. And the religious leaders showed up, and eventually they would crucify him. And we're in the midst of Jesus on his way to Jerusalem to die, and there's a disagreement with some of the religious leaders. And here's how it goes in chapter 15, verse 1. It says, now all the tax collectors, know this, the tax collectors were the most despised of people. They worked for the Roman government. Israel was an occupied territory, so they're collecting taxes given to the Romans. And in fact, some of them would overcharge and would use that to line their pockets. So Jesus, now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to him to listen to him. So man, he's gathering these people. Those of us who have been in the church a while say, we follow Jesus. That's great. That's a good goal to have, but would we be like Jesus in that sinners feel comfortable with us? They come around us because they came around Jesus. And that really bothered the religious establishment. Verse 2, both the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. Like he was not supposed to be doing that. You're supposed to keep your distance from those kind of people. You know, those kind of bad, you keep your distance. Well, why was there this disagreement? The Pharisees and the religious leaders, well, they were good at being good. They had taken the Old Testament. They had added 640 precepts, and they kept that law religiously. And if you didn't, then you stayed away. The worse you were, the farther you stayed. And then Jesus is blowing all this up. Because these people who ain't following any kind of rules of religion or anything, and they're bad, they're tax collectors and sinners, he's meeting with them. And so there's a disagreement. Jesus thinks he ought to be spending time with them, and they don't. And rather than having an argument, yes, I should, no, I shouldn't, or pulling out some Bible verses from the Old Testament, Jesus tells a story of three parables. Parables were short stories from life to make a point. And he tells three parables to make the case that, yes, I ought to be spending time with tax collectors and sinners, people who are far from God. So here's the first of those parables, starting in verse 3. So he told them this parable, saying, what man among you, if he has 100 sheep and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and goes after the one which is lost until he finds it. Now, does he leave this with another shepherd? Are they in a pen? I don't know. He doesn't give us that detail, but he says, I've got one down. I got 99. I'm going to find the one. When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls his friends and neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, I have found my sheep which was lost. Okay, what's your point, Jesus? This is an argument from lesser to greater. If you're a shepherd and you're down a sheep, you go after that lost sheep. And when you do, you call your friends and you say, man, let's throw a party because that sheep that was lost is now found. That's Jesus' point in verse 7. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. So the argument is this: if you'd go after a lost sheep, wouldn't you go after a lost person? Well, yeah, I suppose so. You'd go after the sheep. Then doesn't it make sense then that I'd sit with the lost, the tax collectors and sinners? Oh, it's an argument from lesser to greater. That's parable number one. Parable number two, here we go. Or what woman, if she has 10 silver coins and loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? So she got 10 coins. Again, a coin is probably worth about a day's wage. And she does think, well, I got 90%, 9 of 10. No, I'm going to do a search here. I'm going to turn the light. I'm going to sweep, 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 sweep until I find it. When she's found it, verse 9, and calls all her friends together and says, rejoice with me, for I found the coin which I had lost. Man, this is exciting. I mean, you text, you call. I found what I was looking for. In the same way, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. You get excited about one coin. How much more should you get excited about one person? It's an argument from lesser to greater. Jesus, you shouldn't be sitting with the lost. Yeah, I think I should. Well, we'd go after a lost sheep and we'd go after a lost coin. So wouldn't we go after a lost person? Huh? It's pretty hard to argue with that. Those two parables then set up probably the most known of Jesus' parables, the prodigal son, and we pick that up starting in verses 11 and 12. A man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. So he divided his wealth between them. So Jesus has just made the case that we ought to go after lost, if we've got lost sheep, lost coin, lost people. But we don't understand how offensive lost people can be sometimes. So in this story, there's a guy who has an estate, and the younger son says, hey, I know you're not dead yet, but could you give me my share? It's as is he is wishing his father dead. So perhaps the father's been diagnosed with cancer. It's a treatable cancer, but the son says, you know, Pop, if you just forego treatment, I could get my money sooner. I mean, the loss can be messy. They can be offensive, and this son sure is. Okay, son, you can have your money, verse 13. Many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country, and there he squandered his estate with loose living. We don't get much details what he did, but with loose living, this money that was built up over generations, probably, like that, is gone. You talk about self-centered, you talk about immature, self-absorbed. Many generations of wealth, poof, just gone. Why? Because you were stupid. You loose living. You squandered it. It's going to get bad for the younger son. Now, when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in the country, and he began to be impoverished. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. Now, you need to know, swine, pigs were unclean for Jews. So this is the ultimate in degradation. You've got to go serve pigs. Verse 16 to 19, the guy makes a business decision. He has to humble himself, but here's what he decides. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I'm dying here with hunger? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get up, go to my father, and we'll say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. Yeah, you got that right, young man. You really have. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. I get it. I've blown my position as son. When you talk about somebody selfish and immature, I've blown that. Will you take me on as a hired person? Now, often when Jesus told his parables, There was a surprise amount. There was a kicker. There was something you didn't see coming. Here's what we don't see coming in verse 20. It's the response of the father. So he got up and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. So he was looking for him. It's not like, I'm done. He's looking for him. And he felt anger. No, that's not what he said. He felt compassion for him. And ran. Look, in the Old Testament, in Jesus' time, Jewish men did not run. It was not dignity. This guy doesn't care about his dignity. He runs to his son, embraces him, and kisses him. He is overjoyed. He can't control himself. Really? Yeah, really. This son who wished him dead, his father's heart is broken for his son, even though there was great offense given. And when he shows up, man, he runs. The son, in verse 21 begins his pitch. Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. He's practiced this speech. But he gets cut off, verse 22. But the father said to his slaves, quickly, bring out the best robe. What? And put it on him and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. And bring the fattened calf and kill it and let us eat and celebrate. Celebrate, what are you celebrating? Here's what he's celebrating. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life. He was lost, has been found again, and they begin to celebrate. Remember what happened when the shepherd found the sheep? What did he do? I called my friends. Hey, we got to celebrate. Lost coin. Got to celebrate. Found the lost coin. This lost son comes back. We're going to celebrate that too. See, Jesus could have argued this. Yes, I should. No, you shouldn't. Yes, I should. No, I shouldn't. But he drives it home with a parable. And there's some main characters, some main players in this parable. And one is the younger son. And there's a message for you and me in this. It's never too late with Jesus. You can always come back. Well, you're alive. You can always come back. Andy, you do not realize what I've done. You're right, I don't, but you don't realize what I've done. But the younger son has given great offense. This is to wish his dad dead. It's never too late to return to Jesus. On the flip side, what we learn from the father is the father will go to great lengths. He has love and compassion beyond what we would imagine that we could be restored to him. See, this sets up the gospel. It's the good news. You and I have sinned and we have offended God as much as this younger son did, even more. And the father says you can come back. Jesus died and rose from the dead. We might be restored. If you've never trusted Christ, I invite you to do that. If what I'm saying is, Andy, that just doesn't make sense to you, would you catch Blake up here after or catch me in back? That's the good news, man. The gospel. We are the people that are undesirable to God. We have given offense to God. And Jesus seeks us out. We're asking this question, how does Jesus respond to undesirable people? Here's what we say. Jesus seeks out undesirable people. Jesus seeks out undesirable people. Man, if that's not good news, I don't know what isn't. No matter where you've been, what you've done, what road you've been down, the Father's compassion is greater, and it is not too late to turn back. We might think this is a pretty good time to end the parable. I mean, this is good news, isn't it? But remember, who's the audience here? Who's the audience here? It's the self-righteous Pharisees, right? Who see Jesus hanging out with sinners, kind of like, what's he doing? So Jesus got a message for them, too, in the person of the older brother. Here we go, verse 25. Now the older son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. Oh, what's that? Verse 26, and he summoned one of the servants and began inquiring what these things could be. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf. Because he has received him back safe and sound. Whoa, wait a minute. This brother who wished my father dead, this brother who took half the inheritance and went and squandered, he's come back and we're throwing a party now? Seriously? He ain't happy. Father's rejoicing, but not the older brother. But he became angry and was not willing to go in, and his father came out and began pleading with him. But he answered and said to his father, look, for so many years I've been serving you and I've never neglected a command of yours. There's the religious leaders right there. I've never neglected a command of God. And yet you've never given me a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. When this son of yours came, who has devoured wealth with prostitutes. You killed the fatted calf for him. Verse 31, he said to him, son, you've always been with me, and all that is mine is yours. This older son doesn't realize that he has been a recipient of grace he didn't deserve. He got born into this family, man. He's inherited all this wealth. He didn't, you've worked. But a lot of people worked. They didn't get the wealth you did. You're a recipient of grace, but you are so caught up in your self-righteousness that you can't celebrate. Oh, we'd celebrate a lost sheep. Oh, we'd celebrate a lost coin, but a lost person? I ain't doing that. He isn't worthy of it. You're right. Nobody's worthy of it. But the Father does. And the Father in heaven thinks it's worth celebrating. Look at verse 32. But we had to celebrate and rejoice. Why? For this brother of yours was dead and has begun to live and was lost and has been found. Older brother, I'm inviting you into the party, man. We're going to celebrate this one who was lost and has come back. Won't you join us? You know what? Parable ends with the brother outside. There's no record that he came into the party. What are you saying, Andy? I'm saying there's no record of the brother entering the party. The older brother's self-righteousness kept him from entering the joy and the pursuit of God. Of lost people, of sinners, of tax collectors, of undesirable people. Do you understand? There's some older brother in all of us. You and I are recipients of unearned grace. The more we can major on that, the more we'll be involved with pursuing undesirable people. The more we understand the grace of God, the more we're out there pursuing people just as Jesus pursued people. We live in an increasingly diverse culture, would you say? A lot of people, a lot different than us, a lot of different, a lot of values. They look different, they think different, they do stuff, and sometimes it doesn't even come close to measuring up. Here's a question. This diverse culture, is it an opportunity or is it a threat? Those people who are doing that stuff, does that make us pull back and entrench? And it's like, you better get it together before you're going to come in here. See, that's the entrench, that's the threat. And we got to circle around on the threat. Or is it an opportunity, man? These people need to know Jesus. And I'm going to defy custom, I'm going to defy expectations, and I'm going to be a friend of sinners. My prayer for North Point individually and corporately is we see this increasingly diverse culture as an opportunity and not a threat. Heard one speaker said one time, he said, you know, a practical, it's hard to measure, but a practical test of Christian love is not your professed love for Jesus that we can, it's hard to measure, but it's our love for Judas, the one who betrays us, the one who betrays our values, the one who betrays what we live. Do we go after that person and love that person like Jesus did? When I speak of undesirable people, you've got them in your life, and I've got them in mine. Individual, who are they? Are they too loud? Always laughing, always noisy, always bugging you? They educate their kids differently. They vote differently than you do. They dress differently than you do. They go to different places. You got those people in your mind? Jesus wants you to move towards them. He modeled that. We will do that as we understand more and more that we are recipients of grace that we didn't earn. When we take hold of this God who has loved us unconditionally, that would empower us to move towards the undesirable people in our world. You ever been shopping for bananas? Banana section over there. You go in bananas and there's some that are, man, they're perfectly ready, and you get those, right? And then when those are gone, there's some green bananas, but you can do green bananas because they'll should get better, right? But it's the bruised, overripe bananas that no one takes. Because they're a lost cause, right? Why would you take them? They're only going to get worse. They're only going to be on your compost pile or something else. Imagine the person taking the shopping cart through and loading their cart with bruised, mushy, overripe bananas. Getting to the counter and paying 79 cents a pound. I don't know what bananas are going for. The person checking out, I'm not going to say anything, but it's kind of like, clearly, do you realize what you're buying here? Do you understand when Jesus went to the banana counter, you and I were the bruised, the spoiled, the rotten, and he filled his cart with you and me. But when he got to the counter, it wasn't 79 cents a pound, friends. It's the blood of Jesus. That's the God we serve. And when he empowers us and we understand that, that's the God that empowers us to pursue, to seek out undesirable. We're going to respond here in worship in just a minute. So I'd ask that you stand with me. I'll lead us in a time of prayer and reflection, and then the worship team, will close us out. So our Father in heaven, we're challenged by this because we all got some older brother in us. We stand back and we look at those people and think, no how, no way. And yet you modeled. You went right after those undesirables. You went right after those tax collectors. You went right after those sinners. Lord, would we take hold of this God who's pictured in this with someone willing to go to great lengths, suffer great loss to love us? Because we all got some younger brother in us too. We've given great offense. Lord Jesus, I pray that we would follow you individually and corporately. We would see that increasingly distant culture there, not as a threat, but as an opportunity. And we would follow you in seeking out undesirable people. I pray this in your name. Amen.